Hello, welcome to Critical Line Item. My name's Tom Radlick. Thank you for joining me for this particular podcast. And one of the things that any regular listener to the podcast series will know is that I've been following a bunch of senators looking at consulting firms over the past couple of over the past year, in fact. And there's been an ongoing inquiry which is due to report on the on May the 31st this year, looking at procurement and looking at the culture and the integrity and the assurance of integrity of firms that provide services to government. Now, one of the senators dealing with this is Senator Barbara Pocock from South Australia, who's with the Australian Greens. She's been particularly involved in the Finance and Public Administration References Committee work, as well as being involved in the Parliamentary Joint Committee of Corporations and Financial Services Review into consulting firms and the like. Barbara, thanks for joining me for this particular chat.
Great to be with you, Tom, and thanks for sticking with all of these issues as persistently as you have. The media have played such an important role on this inquiry, and it's really been an important contribution made by you and the Fourth Estate. So thank you.
Oh, no, thank you so much for that acknowledgement, that compliment. But you'll then look, and that possibly is a demand for more of it, I guess, in some respects. Now, if we can begin just in terms of the committee chaired by Senator Richard Colbeck, there's an intersect, isn't there, with the work you do in the public sector portfolio, as in terms of what your position is on public sector issues and rebuilding the public sector. Can we go back to that for a moment before we go to talk more specifically about the committee? Where do the Greens sit on the public sector?
Yeah, sure. They're certainly very connected. I mean, and my portfolio responsibilities in the Greens are public sector, finance, and employment. They're clearly all connected to these issues that have surfaced around consulting. But yes, the implications for the public sector and what we do about it are a critical part of what we've been investigating and what we must make recommendations around.
One of the things you've spoken about is the need to rebuild capacity in the public sector. I think the government has a position on that, and I suspect your position is the same, although you want it to do, you perhaps want it to move 100 times faster. Where do you see the government's position at the moment on rebuilding aspects of the public sector?
Well, I see a range of steps that head in the right direction, and I don't doubt Katie Gallagher's real interest and the government's interest in repairing what has been an appalling decade of loss and deterioration in the leadership and capability of the public sector. So yes, you're right. I want things always, the Greens. We like things to move fast. There's a big repair job needed. And for me, the repair job is both at the level of leadership and accountability, as well as in the actual numbers and capability of the public sector. So there's quite a lot of areas that need reform. And I think when we reflect on robo debt and the leadership weaknesses that exposed, I think there is a real need for, you know, the Frank and Fearless advice that prevailed when I worked in the Reserve Bank 40 years ago, and when I worked in the New South Wales government. I think there was a class of leaders that had a sense of accountability to the public interest. And the politicisation of leadership in the public sector over the last 10 years has really eroded and rusted that leadership. And I think we need to really look closely at the way we select the KPIs, and including the expectations of leaders in building public sector capability. So there's a lot to be done there, and I think we're still picking up the pieces of the Morrison years in particular, in terms of the lack of accountability. You know, if you look at what happened, for example, out of robo debt, we just moved, you know, key leaders, Campbell, Ms. Campbell, around, and it took a while to really take steps to make that not possible. The price has to be paid for people who don't hold the public interest at the core of all they do.
There's a word you mentioned there, it's constantly referred to, and that is politicisation. What do you think has contributed to a politicisation of the public service over a period of time? Because we use that term in a sense, not quite as a throwaway term, but we throw it around a bit. What does it mean from a practical sense, from your own observation?
Well, I think if you are going to give independent advice, sometimes against the short-term interests, for example, or the direction chosen by a minister, the preferred direction of a minister, and you're going to stand up to them and say, "Minister, the consequences of that will be this and this, and that's, you know, against the code of conduct or against the public interest in this portfolio," then you, to be able to do that, you need a minister who is willing to work with you in that way. I know as a senator, for example, it is critical for my staff to be able to say to me, "Senator, this will be the consequence of that direction. We don't think you should do it." And holding your boss to account in any job is a challenge. It's incredibly difficult where you are on a highly paid contract where your first loyalty is expected to be to your minister. So the employment arrangements themselves are really important, and the length of contract and the level of pay. I think what we've done is pay a premium to some of the leaders in our public sector and expect, therefore, that they will be more open to ministerial influence because they can be sacked for not doing something the minister likes. I think that's really been corrosive. We need to return to a values-driven public interest type of leadership, which, you know, means that ministers can't be the boss of the roost and do things which, you know, don't stand up to public scrutiny.
Speaking of public scrutiny and parliamentary scrutiny, you've dealt with, you're in the midst of, still in the midst of one inquiry, but effectively working on a report for another, looking at the role of large professional services firms, regardless of structure, that provide services to government. There was a second interim report issued recently looking at a particular accounting firm. I guess euphemistically we can say it was less than charitable. But given the benefit of time that's passed, what are the things that start to cement in your mind or will start to crystallise in the back of your mind as areas where attention is needed?
You mean in particularly in relation to PwC?
More generally, in terms of
more generally, yeah.
More generally, well, it's the big seven, is it not?
Yes, it's certainly more than the big four. Just before we leave the public sector, Tom, I feel like I've undercooked my answer in as much as I focused a lot on leadership. That is really important, but I think the straightforward business of rebuilding capability and the numbers in the public sector who are able to deliver the core services and the expanding set of demands on the public sector. So it's about pay and conditions and numbers as well as the nature of leadership. So I just want to, you know, say it's a broader public sector reform agenda there, not just leadership. But, yes, what are the broader issues for the relationships and the behaviour of big consulting firms? Well, I think there's quite a large agenda there, which I hope in 2 months' time when our report is released we will be commenting on. For me, there is just the very straightforward question that the big four have got way too big in terms of the amount of public sector work they were doing. They were doing core public sector functions, straightforward policy development, and that I think that business of reducing the reach of their business into the public sector is a number one issue, and that is unfolding. The government has taken steps on that front, but there's still a lot more to do over time to reduce the reach of those of those firms and their perspective, which hasn't always been in the public interest. It's been very much driven by building the business. And nowhere is that more obvious than in the Switkowski report and, you know, reflections inside EY as well in its in the way it works with its staff. So there's a general issue there about chasing business at the cost of the a well-developed public sector, but also at the cost of ethics and good practice. So the issue of conflicts of interest is a second issue that I think this committee, our recommendations need to deal with. We mustn't have large partnerships which on the one hand are assisting government to write climate policy and at the same time consulting to the world's largest fossil fuel producers. You know, there is just straightforward conflicts of interest in climate policy, in aged care policy and across the board. So that's a second issue that's very important in my view. But the third one is the question of transparency and good governance. I think we have had much discussion in our committee about the limited, the many limitations of a partnership model when the partnerships are so large. And it's very difficult to penetrate their financials, their models of business. And I think we need a lot more transparency of the kind that corporate governance gives us, with regulatory teeth where that regulation has failed. We've got some, of course, in the consulting sector who already adopt a non-partnership approach, but it's not enough to say we're going to operate under, you know, the codes of conduct, for example, of corporate structures when there's no regulatory teeth there if they just let us down and don't actually enact what they say they'll do. So there's quite a large agenda about size, conflict of interest internally, and structures that I think our report will need to deal with.
One of the issues I'm certainly written about is the ability of the Parliament itself, even with structures as they presently stand, to legislate transparency based on what people do. Is that something that you will roll around in the back of your mind when you've got 5 seconds spare?
Well, I mean, to be absolutely honest with you, Tom, I feel like our committee has been on a path of repetitive shocks where we are riding the horse and the horse keeps bolting in a range of different directions. And when we think we've seen the worst, it's still not over. So we're riding events and revelations and, yes, sitting around plotting out, you know, a plan for reform has been overshadowed by trying to keep up with events. And I know there are people out there in the consulting industry, because I hear a lot from people who say they're just waiting out the media cycle, they're waiting out the parliamentary cycle, a bit like the banks hoped and probably reasonably successfully rode out the Royal Commission cycle, you know, hoping that there won't be a lot of teeth in the response. I'm hoping we'll do better and actually have actions which will result in greater transparency. But I agree with you, the governance, the crafting of those mechanisms is a challenge, and it certainly includes making sure that those who advise on regulation, for example, bodies like the TPB, the Tax Practitioners Board, actually have a public interest at the core of their activity and are not run by people who 5 minutes ago were actually running, you know, in the leadership of a Big Four partnership model. So I think there's something about both the way we regulate and who is on the regulatory bodies that we need to pay attention to. But, yes, you're right, we haven't really crafted out a set of responses. I do think the great thing about this committee's work to date has been, as you have observed, the very close level of cooperation that's been nonpartisan. It's crossed all parties and we've all been equally shocked and we're equally committed to seeing real change.
But, yeah, it's interesting to observe, but also there are some, I guess you've heard me say this in other contexts before, but some of the solutions are actually simpler than people may think they are when they're in the middle of the dust storm of every second revelation that it comes to pass. You looked recently at the sort of an international nature of partnerships. I've looked at that closely as well, particularly the way they run. One of the issues quite clearly is the need for not just the committee you're on at the present time, but also the Parliament more generally, is to understand how large professional services networks operate globally and how their Australian arms. Right. Is there scope, without sort of wishing to commit you to anything, but do you think there's scope for a separate inquiry of sorts on partnerships and partnership law?
I'm very reluctant to suggest future inquiries because some of my staff might be listening and they would say, lie down, Barbara. Because, you know, I must say, you know, I'm only a newbie in the Senate, less than 2 years, but there is great forensic capability in our Senate committee processes. I'm really impressed by what they're capable of doing if senators kind of really sign up and do the work and have such amazing support as we do in the Senate from our secretariats. But at this stage, I haven't got in mind any particular new inquiries, but it may well be the case that some elements of what we're looking at do require a real deep dive into international models and examples. We're certainly hearing a lot about the US bodies and the UK bodies that have powers that don't exist in Australia and can do major, yes, PCAOB exactly in the US that's just fined PwC $920,000 for its 1 year delay in actually not sending notice that it was had problems here in South Australia, in Australia, and was being chased by the TPB. So we, you know, there's been no such tool to apply here in Australia, and we really need to be looking at those other models. So there may well be, and I think it's very common in reports to make recommendations for further work. We don't want to make a lot of superficial recommendations in complex areas that have unintended consequences. But I hope we're not just going to put off all the difficult questions. I think we really have a lot of evidence which says there's some things we really do need to act on.
What has been, I guess, the other issue is you've seen numerous examples of or numerous witnesses and numerous examples of things come before you. What's annoyed you the most?
Well, what's really annoyed me actually is the lack of forthcomingness, if that's a verb. You know, that really critical information at every stage has had to be extracted like a rotten tooth. Just take your example of the powers of the international network, for example, that exists in the world of PwC. You know, I really did not have a good grip on what those powers were, exactly what happened when Kristen Stubbins, acting CEO, was replaced overnight on the basis of a phone call by the leadership of PwC internationally. And the way in which an international leadership has been able to come in and step over the top of the, you know, nearly 1,000 local partners and govern, I think is surprising. And I did not have a proper understanding of that. Now, that may well reflect my newness to the field, but I think it's a surprise to many people. And we don't have the proper governance, you know, all of the rules before us. We don't even have in the public sphere the partnership documents for the Australian entities. And so that is the much overused word of opaque remains relevant to local governance, let alone to international. So every stage, We have had to work really hard to get the facts on the table, and we still don't have the very basic information, even in Australia, of who did what around and in response to that series of emails, which we have the redacted version of in the public at the Senate level. And we certainly don't have the Linklater report, which goes to the international actions and behaviours of people. So I just think the really shocking thing to me is that this is a very large organisation, each of the large consulting firms with thousands and thousands of workers in there, and yet, and they're very influential in the public sector, and one in four of their dollars in the last few years has been out of the public purse, and yet their governance is obscure, and their willingness to provide information, both PwC but the others as well, has been less than helpful at times. I mean, I feel like KPMG, for example, and the experience we've had with trying to explore their use of mapping is another example where there just haven't been straightforward answers and direct honesty about what's really happening and the way in which they work. And there are big consequences for citizens, but also for business and the way in which advisory structures in Australia work.
I'm mindful of the fact that you've said you don't want to impose additional work on others, particularly your staff. but I'm going to chance my arm anyway. The one thing that has been apparent over almost 30 years of looking at the accounting and auditing fraternity in this country is that there's been an absence of regular parliamentary oversight of the professional associations. And hearings have tended only to be held when there have been inflection points or crisis points. As I said, I'm wary of what might come my way in a second, but is there even conceptually a role for more frequent or more periodic oversight of the professions by the federal parliament, given that ultimately, most professions have a public interest objective. They tell us they're acting in the public interest. But who oversees that, ultimately? Is that a self-review function, or is there a role for Parliament to have more frequent hearings with professional associations so that they're reminded, in a sense, that they've got an obligation to the public interest and the Parliament, as a proxy for the community, has an interest in what they do?
A really interesting question, and certainly a major area for our committee to make deep consideration about in drafting our reports, because I think what has been exposed is very weak, what some people call co-governance, the role played by professional associations in accounting. I personally think we should not be governing very large aspects and elements of public life, including in economic life, through parliamentary governance. And look, I'm not an expert in that field, but I think the role of the parliament is to create rules by which institutions work, whether they're trade unions, whether they're corporations, whether they're tax agents, and that other bodies and agencies do the governing of it. I think if you want Parliament to govern the professional standards of accounting, I think that's not the role of Parliament. I think the role of Parliament is to set the regulations. Now, there are exceptions to that. ASIC, for example, has a regulatory, has a reporting, or there is an oversight role in the Parliament on that very significant body through committees of the Parliament. But I think we need to have a system of governance in our financial services and related sectors which is robust and does not depend on royal commissions, on Senate inquiries, or even on, you know, asking the big four or large consulting contractors to appear at estimates. I can just think that that clogs up and distorts the role of the parliament. Now, I'm not saying we won't do it or wouldn't be a good idea for some things, but I don't think managing accountants is the job of the parliament any more than I think it's the job to manage tax agents. We have a tax practitioners board made up of experts with a clear rule book recently amended to do that job. And I think when they go off the rails, we should amend the legislation as we have, but I'm not sure we should be actually directly managing them.
But isn't there, and this is a good point of debate, because professional bodies are recognised in various pieces of legislation, both at a Commonwealth and at a state level. And one of the thoughts that keeps creeping into my mind and seems to nestle in there and never want to leave is that bodies are recognised in law, but how does the Parliament, which has made the legislation, to either recognise the organisations or delegate that power to a department to recognise them, know that those bodies remain fit and proper? The oversight function isn't about governing the profession, but asserting whether the law as it operates is being complied with and whether there's any care and maintenance that's required. So it's a slightly different point, I think, if you look at it that way.
Yeah, no, I'm on that wavelength. I think, if bridges start falling down in Australia, then we want to know what's wrong with the professional regulation of engineers in the Parliament. And similarly in relation to audit and the many important functions of accountants and all of the functions that they perform. So, yes, I think setting the framework for robust regulation with proper penalties and, an independence and transparency is very, very important. And I think we definitely don't have that good functioning at the moment. So there's a lot of work to do. And, of course, there is absolutely no regulation of consulting as a profession itself, nothing at all. And I think that's also shown up as quite a significant issue as well.
And before you've been generous with your time this afternoon, before we wrap up, is there anything else that you'd like to highlight in this morass of things that have been popping up over the past 12 months?
I think there are quite a number of issues that we will need to come to grips with when we write our report. And I'm hoping that there will be a really good parliamentary response, and from our recommendations, but they'll certainly go to the size of the public sector, the appropriate use of consulting in the public sector, but also regulation structure and codes of conduct, plus of course the proper functioning of professional organisations and the licensing and professional management. I think there's also a challenge for us in the public sector itself, in the tax advisory structures and the management of all of these issues in the ATO, in the TPB, in Treasury. You know, have we got all of that structure working well? I know there are some issues. There's an inquiry next week into some of the responses of the government to these issues, the level of fines and so on. So I think there's a lot of work there to be done on quite a large canvas. But one thing I'm really confident about is the public interest in this. I was this morning out visiting, of all things, a really interesting management of waste facility. And the manager of that facility raised PwC with me. You know, this is a long way from his business, but he says, I've been watching closely. I really want to know what you're going to do. This is really important. And look, I get stopped down the street on this issue. Most people probably a year ago would have had no idea. And I know you've spent 40 years in this terrain. It's very familiar to you. But there is now a level of public interest that I think we as senators really feel a responsibility to respond to. So we have to do the right thing, make it so it's doable, but also make a difference in response to all of the evidence that we've gathered. Quite a responsibility, Tom.
I've been talking to Senator Barbara Pocock from the Australian Greens, represents South Australia, but has also been busy chasing canning and consulting firms up and down drain pipes over the past 12 months. Barbara, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks so much, Tom. Great to be with you.